Is being recorded.
So welcome everyone to our Linda and Friends meeting. It is, what day is this? This is March 7th today, and I am super happy to be able to fill in for Linda today while she is off on yet another adventure. And I'm always so sorry that I don't get more time to spend with this group because I enjoy it so much. And on many, many Tuesdays, my grandson is here and we are busy playing. And so I don't always have time to come and join you. So it's great. I'll be here with you this week. And I think maybe next week, we're finalizing that for sure. But I might have 2 weeks that I get to be with you, which I love. And so, oh, Angela, thank you. I forget about the reactions, and I'm the one that told Linda about using these all the time anyway. Actually, it was one of our Japanese practitioners that came up with the idea, and I totally love it. And then I'm with groups that don't do it, and I forget. So I'm going to remember that we love our reactions. It's so cool. So I have a lot of different kinds of ideas for you today. And first of all, I would love to find out, anybody have any questions, anything that's come up for you, anything that you want to mention? It's always cool to check in. Anything? Yeah, Angela, please.
I've shared this one with Katerina, but she won't mind me saying all over again. But I tried T-Touch on my first ever cat, and seeing as Katerina's cat is there, it just felt the right thing to say. But my first ever experience, I was looking after my friend's cat for a couple of days, and she taught me so much, and she gave me so much confidence. And I started off the sessions, and it was literally one sort of slide across the ear, and she'd move away, and she just kept going in circles, coming back. And by the end of the couple of days, she was literally laying down next to me, and I was working both her ears, and I was doing little bits around her mouth, and I'm like, I can't believe this. And it just, I just felt this amazing thing come to me that said, you think you're a dogs and horse person, you just haven't met the right cat. And it taught me a massive lesson, and has just shown me that if I'm going down the practitioner route, I need to get way more experience with lots of different animals. And I think there's lots of people that are there to help me and guide me, and animals too.
Oh, Angela, this is, I have so many things I could say about this. This is so, so, so very exciting. Marnie, do you want to jump in before I carry on with whatever I'm going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that over the years, we all started with horses, and every time we added a species, your work on your original one or whatever, it's up the game immensely. I just so always take an opportunity to work on not your own, not your species. You just won't believe what it'll do for your work on what would you call it? Your main love or whatever.
But your primary species.
Yeah, right. It's amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree with Marnie, because if you have your primary species, you have a preconceived idea about what they do and what you expect and that kind of thing. And I also cannot say enough about exploring different species, of course, in a way that's safe and mindful and all of that kind of thing. And it just expands your experience so much. My work with working with young horses, was a great foundation when I started working with llamas. And I worked with llamas for several years. And I have used those ideas so much in working with other species. When I worked with the baby buffalo, I'd never worked with baby buffalo before and have not since. And what do you do? I don't know anything about them. And I just tapped into my skills that I learned from working with llamas. And it worked out really awesome for these baby buffalo. And so you never know what this different species have to share with you. I think too, Angela, the cool part is that it sounds like you stayed in curious. And I think the more we can stay in that state of curiosity, the better it is. Because so often we're working and we have, you know, okay, I sure hope she lets me touch her. And I think that as soon as you get into, oh, I sure hope this works, it so totally puts you in the future. You're not in now anymore. Actually, as soon as you think, oh, I hope this works, or, ooh, I could have done that differently, you're not now. And animals really know it. They really know it if you're there with them in the now, or if you've gone somewhere else. And so the fact that you didn't have a preconceived notion, you're just going to explore a little bit. Hey, I wonder what would happen if I tried to do one little stroke with her. And you're like, hold, sit still here. I want to do some tea touches on you, right? And so I think that that's, you know, it's such a perfect setting to just give this cat the space to explore along with you. And you can be in that place of, huh, I wonder what would happen if I tried this, or I wonder what would happen if I try that. And then you were open to her communication. And I just think it's a perfect state of being for any of the work that we do. So often it's hard to let go of the outcome. You know, our fear stuff bubbles up, or our ego stuff creeps in some way, or I just want to practice these touches, hold still. And it is, you know, it opens up the space for the joyfulness of this work, I think, when you can be that way. I was just talking with a group a couple of days ago about how interesting it is when you stay in that place of curiosity, how much you can make the animal more curious too, I think. You know, we were talking about a dog that was a little bit uncertain. And by stopping before the dog said that she should stop, and just doing a little bit and giving this dog some space, he started looking at her like, that's it? That's all? That's all you wanted to do? What was that? What, yeah, I could do that again, right? And it was so cool to invite this dog into being curious with her. Huh, well, I don't know. Maybe you could try that again. And so cool. So I will encourage you to expand your cat experience. And I think cats too, you know, they can be fairly opinionated and they're really different. And so they do have so much to teach us. So thanks for sharing that. That's great. And yes, Marty says cats are especially good teachers. Yeah, because they are definitely who they are, right? They're not going to say, oh, I bet she really wants me to just stay here, so I'll just hang out. Now, I just made a gross generalization about cats, because there certainly are cats who have a lot of dog-like qualities, and there are dogs that have cat-like qualities. But in general, you know, they can be pretty awesome teachers. And just in general, if anybody else has less experience with cats, I think the one thing that is the biggest thing, I think, that's different between working with dogs and working with cats is that cats tend to have a more sensitive nervous system. And so the amount of time that you might work on a cat, I think in general, is less long than you might work with a dog. You might know those cats that their nervous system just gets overstimulated. And, you know, the cats that you can pet them and they love it, and then they nail you and run away, right? They just get overwhelmed with the sensory input. And so for a lot of cats, you might find that the shorter, more frequent sessions are way more useful than, you know, as long as you might work on the average dog. Angela says, I finished a session and said thank you to, is it Booja? Booja? She came up and licked me on my head in acknowledgement. That's so sweet. that is so cool. A good time was had by all. I love it. That is so cool. Well, keep up exploring, and love to hear about it. Anybody else? Anything to share from last time? or any questions or anything? I always like to leave a little pause because I know sometimes people are like, oh, do I want to share? Shall I not? Do I want to say anything? Do I not? So Becky, yeah, please.
I was just going to say, you know, it occurs to me that I don't know that I've shared this before with you guys. Maybe I have. That I have a dog who, she's a hound. So she's not the most solicitous in the West. But of an evening after she's eaten, she will come up on the couch and solicit me tea touching her belly. And I've tried moving up to her ears because I know it's a digestive thing for her, but she really will take that paw and say, nope, I want that on my belly. And she'll stay until she's burped. And then when she burps, she's like, okay, thank you. And off she goes.
That is so cool. That is so cool.
But it is that piece of, you know, and I remember when I first started T-Touch, I had a professional, one of you guys who, you know, was certified coming in and doing T-Touch on one of my dogs. And when I first started working on him, he would look at my hand and look at me like, could you please call Sherry? I didn't have it right. But over time, I mean, that part of how there are teachers is it's almost like they're saying warmer, colder.
Well, and that's why our observation is so important. And I, you know, this is whether you're working on animals or people, you know, being able to be a good observer is so important because they do communicate in such subtle ways. Now, Becky, your dog saying, no, my belly, that's fairly clear. And you know, sometimes those kinds of things, it's so interesting to look at things from different perspectives because sometimes it's, oh, I really want my belly. And sometimes it's, oh, I really don't want you to be somewhere else. Right. So you can see it from a bunch of different perspectives. You know, I know dogs that will say, oh, yeah, please, please do stuff with my tail. Oh, I love it when you touch my tail. Yeah. Scratch my rear end. That's what I want. Now, maybe they're saying, I really like the work around my tail. Maybe they're saying, please stay as far away from my mouth as you possibly can. And so they can be so clever at distracting us a little bit. Oh, you don't want to touch my mouth. Let's play. Oh, look how cute I am with my toy. Let's do that instead. Right? So sometimes they can be amazing negotiators and we're not even aware of it, right? Oh, that, you know what? I never have touched his mouth. I wonder why that is. Well, maybe because as soon as you start thinking about it, he thinks of something else to do that would be way more fun for him anyway. And so I think this is, again, where our observation skills and seeing the bigger picture can be so valuable. So it is, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. I have to say that, you know, even, I mean, I've been doing this work more than 35 years now. And I know sometimes people will say, don't you ever get tired of doing the same thing over and over again? Little circles, little circles. It's like, are you kidding? Absolutely not. It is so fun and so interesting because every time is different, right? Every animal's different. Every person is different. Every animal and person family is different. And you never know what's going to happen. And I think that that is so cool. And there are so many choices of what we do. And so it's every bit as exciting for me today as it was the first day that I picked up that magazine and was trying to do T-touches on my horse out there in the barn. So it's quite a journey. Anybody else? Anything to share? Anything that you've been doing in the last week? T-touchy experiences? You can just unmute yourself or raise your hand. I don't care either way. So
I'm just gonna thank you, Debbie, for asking, because part of what makes me remember to T-touch myself or my animals across the week is that I know on Tuesdays we're going to be asked.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, however motivation comes to you. And I don't know about all of you, but it sure is a lot easier for me to work on other people than it is to think about working on myself. And so I think that these kinds of opportunities to share our own experiences and remember, oh, that's right, I could do T-Touch on that, right, is it's just a nice reminder, because it happens to all of us. You know, I'll have something happen and somebody said, well, you're doing T-Touch, of course. Oh, mm-hmm, yes, of course I am. Yeah, I'll get to that just as soon as I get home. I recently injured my Achilles tendon. This happened to be Christmas Eve, walking into my nephew's house. I'm carrying 4-year-old and she's about 40 pounds, and walking in and looking ahead to family in the room that I haven't seen for a long time, really looking forward to it. Have not been in the house for many, many years. Did not remember that partway down the hallway, there's a step. And I am walking, and all of a sudden my foot goes out into the air, and I landed really hard on my foot as I went down this step. And the second, carrying 40 pounds on one side, right, smashed my foot into the floor. The second my foot hit, I thought, oh, I wonder if I just broke my foot. I was way more concerned about staying on my feet, because 4-year-old and I falling down together would not have been a nice way to start out our Christmas Eve celebration. So everybody's like, oh, are you all right? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. And limped my way around for the evening. But the next morning, I was completely non-weight bearing. I thought, oh, it'll be better in the morning. No, I actually had to crawl to the bathroom because I could not put any weight on my foot. And I, interestingly enough, ended up with a partial Achilles tear as a result of that. So it must have been my foot hitting and then me trying to keep my balance that tweaked my tendon. Now I understand that this is a really common injury for 20 to 30 year old men who play sports. And then there's me. So I was so thankful that I have T-Touch to add to what I was doing. Obviously saw the doctor and went into orthopedic boot and all that stuff, and still going to physical therapy. But I am so, so grateful that I could add T-Touch. The physical therapist and the physician, they are both, are we surprised? They are both blown away at how fast I'm recovering. And really like, wow, this is really great. Look how well you're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm not just doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing medically, right? I'm working on it all the time. What touches did I do? In the beginning, this is, you know, this happens to us a lot. In the beginning, I couldn't touch it. And so I was working in the air over it a little bit. I was doing Python lifts on my leg above the injury to increase the circulation to my foot and ankle. I started, and I'm trying to remember, it's been a little while. I started out like with half pressure touches, and I was working pretty quickly with clouded leopard touches and clouded leopard coiled pythons, because I felt like that little bit of lift with my clouded leopard, it just added that little bit of relaxation, because my foot, my heel, was pretty frightened about this contact. So I really did quite a combination of lifts and circles with lifts until I could work around it more in that way. So as I'm looking at the video in my head of what I was doing, I think I think mostly that. And I had ice on it. You know, I would do my exercise things with it and put ice on it. And I could also be doing touches, you know, through the ice or with the ice. And that can be really helpful as well. So it wasn't too long before I could actually touch it and then actually use, you know, like a 3 pressure contact and that kind of thing. And I'm sorry, is it Rasia Susanna or tell me your name, please. Unmute. Is it Rasia? Is that right? Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just, I went to shoulder surgery recently. I think my internet is unstable. And so intense that medication so that I actually wasn't able to remember TTET. How?
Basia, I wonder if it's better if your camera is off. It might make it easier to hear your voice because I'm only getting every other word or something.
I think internet. Well, so maybe
Yeah, that's better.
Can you hear me better now?
Yep. This is better.
Mm-hmm. It's connection that is not stable. Yeah.
So well, you were talking about your surgery?
Yeah, talking about the shoulder surgery. And, you know, any kind of T-touch that can lower the blood pressure because very high blood pressure. And I was wondering anything one can do to help that. I can, of course, also take but I stopped the medication for lowering the blood. During this surgery, it went way up the blood pressure. So I'm hesitant to take medication again right now.
Right. I understand. Yeah. So what suggestions does anyone have for Rasia at this point? Any thoughts? Yeah, Angela.
Doing some heart hugs and some ear work.
Ear work, yes. I keep forgetting it times. I remember that it also, but thank you. I kept doing that.
I love that you brought that up, that when you're in that much pain, sometimes all your brain goes out the window and you're not thinking about T-touch. And the heart hugs is the one that I most commonly forget. And it's like you said, Angela, it's probably the most important one because there's an emotional component to that heart hug that's a little different. And I think anytime we need to be soothed, I guess, or I'm not sure what the right word for your language would be, but comforted, that heart hug has a different quality to it that's super important. And when you've had a surgery, you've had, you know, my question to you was going to be, with your blood pressure, do you suspect that from the anesthesia that you had, or do you think some of that's from anxiety or the pain? Do you have an idea about that?
The pain was worse in the high blood pressure. But the thing is, I'm not in pain right now, and the blood
pressure is still high. So one of the things that happens for us is we struggle with resilience, you know, with that ability to go back to that baseline. And T-touch is, you know, that's what we do T-touch for in animals so much, is that we're trying to get them to remember what calm and safe feels like. And so again, that T-Touch will help bring that blood pressure down would be my guess. But beyond that, we're going to do some stuff in that second half hour. Some of that mindfulness stuff. We'll do a guided imagery that will also probably drop your blood pressure some points. So we'll do some very clear.
The problem is I can't do the heart chakra with both hands.
Right. Well, that's a good question, Debbie. When you only have one hand to do a heart hug, is that okay?
You betcha. Just do it with one hand, right? Totally, totally okay. And you can experiment, right? This is all about getting feedback from your cells. And it is, I think it's such an important acknowledgement for us and to work with ourselves in the way that our cells feel heard and trust us. And so I think if you're not sure about something, try it and see what feedback you can get from your body and mind. So I would totally work. I work with lots of people with shoulder issues, and you can't use both hands very easily in many cases, but you can use one hand. You could use one hand and you could imagine it. You could imagine the whole heart hug as long as you can really make a picture of yourself doing it and recognize it helps a little bit if you have actually done it a few times, because it makes imagining it easier because you already have a feeling of what that is. But keep in mind that imagining something vividly is much the same as actually doing it. And there have been times when I've wanted to do a heart hug and maybe it's not the easiest time for whatever reason to actually physically do it. You can really imagine it and have really similar effects. So getting creative about how you might do that is part of the work. You know, get wild and crazy and see what feels best. The other thing I'm just going to mention is how much the ears really are super, super important, because the ears connect to every single part of the body and also have a tendency to normalize vital signs. And so, the suggestion for heart hugs and ears, I think those are both really, really awesome. Marnie, you had your hand up first.
Well, I was going to say kind of what Becky said is that there are some things that you, and I'm not the expert on this, but there are some things that you can do that help you, bring your blood pressure down or whatever. And it's a good idea to practice them ahead of time and see which ones work for you. So if you're in a crisis or you're kind of spiraling between the pain and worrying about the shoulder and the blood pressure, is you can just lower your blood pressure. The ear work is amazing to do, but there are other things too. And Becky's really the expert, but Becky did speak up and the second part. And that stress tip lip, I'm lisping, or my computer's lisping, how's that? But that stress tip list also has some good things that you should try and see how it works for you, because everybody's different with what works. Some of it's like alternate nostril breathing, others it's swimming, or taking a warm bath, they're lighting a candle and sitting in a warm bath. I don't know, but it's good. I'm sorry.
Well, I can't do anything like that because I have to keep the arm totally still.
Oh, sure. I mean, that was just generally kind of saying, and yeah. I couldn't hear all you said very much, but I dealt with a really bad shoulder for a long time. I used to not pretend that it was bad, and I know about trying to sleep at night and all those things. So if you ever want to talk about that, I'd be happy to share. It's a struggle, but it's doable. And I didn't have all the stuff we have now, all the help like working. You can work in the air around it if you can't touch it. And also you can put something over it, like a towel, even a warm towel might work, and do the circles through it. I mean, they're just, it's kind of like the same thing that Debbie was saying, was a curiosity. See what works for you and really helps, so that you have those resources when things are, you know, it comes, I'm sure it comes and goes as to how your stress is and the pain, but.
Yes.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Katrina, is this on this topic or is this something different? This topic, okay, go.
This it may be irrelevant, but if you haven't checked both arms or wrists, your blood pressure, it's always worth checking it. And maybe you have done it on the arm that did not have surgery, but I work at a chiropractor's office and we've had people with shoulder issues with sky high blood pressure on one side and absolutely normal on the other. And once the problem was resolved, it was absolutely normal. I'm not saying she, and I'm also thinking, why would she have her blood pressure checked on the arm that's sore? So that doesn't make sense. But I think it's always worth pointing that out to see that as well, because I've seen that many times.
Okay, that's it. What an interesting idea. I would have never thought about that. That's very cool.
It's your nervous system. So when the right information is flowing, then yeah.
And I think that be careful about falling into the shoulds, right? Because I have this going on, so I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And I think it's really worthwhile to, again, check in with yourself and with your cells, because you may have an idea pop into your head and you might think, well, that's crazy. Why would I think that? And I think it's such a great idea to trust those thoughts that drop into your head. And I, when that happens to me, I just kind of run it through the filter, my T-Touch filter, does it make sense? Is it safe? Does it seem reasonable? And sometimes those ideas can be really worthwhile. And particularly with blood pressure, the slower touches will tend to lower blood pressure. Like the 3-second circles are good for lowering blood pressure. I've had experiences where I was demonstrating 3-second circles on somebody and they had to go sit down. I wasn't trying to lower their blood pressure, but it did. So I'm really careful about doing 3-second circles on people that are standing up. And it might be that going out to do a few touches in nature somewhere, or, while you're watching something that's enjoyable on TV or something. I think the bigger picture of how to release tension in whatever way would work for you decreases pain. It helps you to find that sense of balance within yourself that I think is so very important. And so as opposed to our tendency to throw away, oh, why would I think that would be a good idea? I think stay in that place. I wonder why I would think that's such a good idea. Maybe I'll just try that. Who knows? I remember a long time ago, Linda, working with a person who, I'm trusting because this idea just popped into my head. So that's what I'm doing with this. I don't know how relevant it is to what we're talking about. But she was working with a woman who had something going on with her hand. I think she had a lot of arthritis and her knuckles were big and her fingers were kind of twisted. And Linda was suggesting that she do T-touches on her hand. And she didn't like her hand very much because it didn't look like her youthful hand and all the effects of the arthritis that she had. And so Linda took a beautiful silk scarf and laid it over her hand. And once that scarf was over her hand, this person was so happy to do T-touches on her knuckles and around her fingers with a totally different perspective, seeing this very beautiful hand covered in this silk scarf, as opposed to the hand that, she didn't like very much because of its, the way it looked and its abilities and that kind of thing. And so I think that our perceptions are important, and and not being afraid to try something. Wonder what would happen if I just tried, wonder what would happen if I did some touches with the basting brush, right? Or my makeup brush. I wonder what that would be like. I wonder if that would be interesting for my shoulder or interesting for my hand or my heel or whatever I might be working on. I think working from curiosity is just so, so important. Teresa, you had your hand up a minute ago. Did you still want to say something? Unmute, please.
Sorry, I was late. I was in Zoom and I did not really, and I have to, you know, my video is ill, as you can see. So you can hear me without looking at me. No, okay. I didn't know exactly what was the purpose you were talking, but I'm happy to see that Raisa has her surgery and hopefully she will get better soon. What I just wanted to add as blood pressure is one of my items for a long time working in cardiology, etc. I would just to say something what I did in the very beginning when I started T-Touch for you. I had a friend and I was doing T-touch on her back very slow, very slow. So 3 seconds. And so she is a psychologist, so she knows how to be relaxed. And she was so relaxed that she was almost falling down. So what I did, and really very quickly, was ear work, both sides. So that's the other side. It's so good when you can do something for one reason and for the other, and it's still the same. You just do it probably a little bit different. So thank you. That's what I just wanted to share. And nice to see you, Debbie. How nice to see you.
So always so happy to see you, Teresa. And thank you for sharing that. You know, keep in mind that that these T-touches help the body to come back to a state of balance, right? So we're doing the same touches for, like with digestive issues, you're doing the same touches for diarrhea that you do for constipation. You're doing the same thing for high blood pressure that we might for low blood pressure, because it's all about bringing back to balance. And I think that's such an amazing gift, because we don't have to know what it is, right? We're not trying to fix something. We're not saying, oh, this is the problem and I'm trying to make this happen. We're just able to say to the cells in the nervous system, hey, let me help you remember, as Linda always says, let me help you remember your potential for perfect function. Let me help you find that way to feel better and to find that balance within us. And I love that, because it, you know, it takes us out of it, right? I'm not trying to do anything. All I'm doing is helping remind the cells what they can do for themselves. And it's also, you know, a reason why we are not in the situation, why, you know, it's always okay to try. It's always okay to try. You can't do any harm with this work. The worst that happens is you spend some meaningful time, but you're not going to make something worse. And I think that is so important, particularly for people that are just learning. You know, sometimes I talk to people who will say, oh, I really, really want to work on my dog, or I really want to work on my child, but I'm not good enough yet. I'm going to keep practicing, and then maybe someday I'll be good enough to work on somebody. And I love the fact that even if you've just read a little teeny article, you can get out there and just try it, because you can't do any harm. Right. And the power of intention is so important with this work. Even if you're, as I've often said to people, you can be doing upside down, backwards triangles. And if your intention is clear, you can still see things improve. Yes, the more you're paying attention to the details of how we teach the work, you know, you may be more effective, of course. And as long as you're listening to the feedback and paying attention to your pressure, those are the things that are important, then you're not going to make something worse. And I think that there's great freedom in that, because just try it. you know, just try it and see what happens. And I think that makes it really, really fun. I just have to jump back and look at chat because I'm terrible at reading and talking at the same time. I guess that's not an uncommon thing. Marnie was saying going out into nature and doing tea touch. Oh gosh, isn't that, I just can't think of anything that's better than sitting in your most favorite nature place, either in your mind or actually physically, and doing your tea touch. And I think that's it's just a good thing for us, particularly if you find yourself in situations that are less harmonious, you can take yourself to that harmonious place in your mind or physically out there really easily. So that's super. Anybody else, anything to share? Questions? Anything? One more thought about working on the shoulder. Please remember that it's not just about working on the part that's hurt. Remember that working on the opposite part as gently and kindly as you would be as if you were working on the affected part can be so helpful. And many of you have heard the story about when Linda worked on my face. I got hit in the face with a hyperextended bungee cord that snapped back and hit me right here. It wasn't my moment to be blind. It was a big deal. Felt like getting hit with a sledgehammer. It flattened me on the ground just like that. And I had after it was, I had a fracture and sutures and stuff, and it healed. It looked really healed. It wasn't healed. I continued to have radiating pain anytime I would touch anywhere around that part of my face. That would last a few minutes. It was a really, and I had tried to work on it. I tried to start, don't start right on the place where it hurts. Start someplace else, right? Start on my neck, start on the other side. You know, I tried all this stuff. And as soon as I got anywhere near radiating pain. And so when I had the opportunity for Linda to work on me 2 months later, and she was looking for where could she start, it was so interesting that my cells were really clear that the place to start was between my shoulder blades. And I was so surprised. And this was a powerful experience for me for a whole bunch of reasons, right? Because I think for ourselves and for our animals, something may look really healed and it may not be. That's why I'm always saying with animals, if they think it's a problem. Right. It's not, the vet says, it's healed. He's just making that up. He's not just making that up. But it was so interesting that that's where, according to my cells, that Linda had to start. And it was also interesting to me because, of course, I trust Linda. You know, we've been really good friends for a very, very, very long time. Of course, I trust her. But my cells didn't. My cells said, yeah, not anywhere here. Start between the shoulder blades. And then she worked all over the unaffected side of my face. And once she did that, the affected side of my face was fine. She didn't even have to work on it. And this is such an amazing aspect of this work that you don't always know what's going to happen. And so give it a try. See, trust your intuition, trust your feedback, see what you see. This was an interesting experience too for me. Linda worked on me for an hour, and for an hour I was just doing a monologue of what I was feeling in my body for the group that was watching. And I could feel my cells talking to each other. At one point I could see little question marks inside of all these little cells as they were like, wow, isn't that interesting? And all this networky thing going on all over the place. And, you know, I knew it. I knew that's what happened, but feeling it was such a fascinating experience. And at one point, partway through, you know, Linda had been working on me about, 25 minutes or so probably. And she said, how would your cells feel if we took a little break? Because she really had been working on me quite a while, all things considered. How would your cells feel if we decided to take a little break? instant response, my cells would be really disappointed. so we kept working, right? And so she just worked from my shoulder blade. She just worked all over this side of my face. And then all this disappeared. She didn't even have to work on the area that was affected. And from that, and then after that, of course, then we have a practice session in the training so people can practice their touches. I went to lay down. I needed some processing recovery time at that point. And so I rested for about 20 minutes. And then I was stunned. I could touch anywhere around here. And I had absolutely, it was completely gone. And I had been trying to change that for a couple of months. So it's, you know, it's so amazing the changes that we can experience with this work. So you never know what really might make the difference. Yeah, Marnie.
Reminded me that when Linda doesn't even talk about it because she these are, well, I'm not saying these aren't the miracles to us that they are, you know, she just does these things, but she broke her wrist. Do you remember that? And she just worked on it so much they never ended up casting it or anything. It was ridiculous. But she doesn't even say anything about that. And that's a good lesson. And she did work a long time, and it may be harder to work on somebody else for that kind of time. I don't really know, but she just kept going, and it was kind of astonishing. We were sort of like, oh my God. But as I say, she doesn't, you know, she doesn't even talk about that. And that was amazing. But what it is it says what you can do. You just, as Edie Jane would say, do the work.
Just do the work. Exactly. Anything else, anybody? So before we come up to our break time, I have a question for all of you. Do any of you have trouble with sleeping? Anybody have sleep stuff? I have to say that I want to share with you what I've done about sleep that has really changed my life. I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about today, and I was just talking with somebody else about this, and I thought, oh my gosh, I have to share this. So for many, many, many years, I have had chronic insomnia. And what that meant for me is I can usually fall asleep pretty quickly, and then I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep. And maybe I just stay awake, or maybe I go back to sleep, and then I'm really sound asleep when the alarm goes off and I have to be functional. And that would happen to me maybe 3 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week. And I can be a really functional person with not so much sleep. And I recognize that just because you can doesn't mean it's a good thing. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens for us while we are sleeping. You know, body does a lot of repair, body gets rid of cellular waste products. There's a lot of mental processing. There's a reason why sleep is so important for us. And I have tried, you can't even imagine all the things I have done to try to improve my sleep. Probably everything of anything that you've ever read. I've tried different medications. I've done a lot of things, and nothing really worked. And then somebody told me about this app that you can get on your phone or your iPad, and it's called Calm. Anybody know about Calm, C-A-L-M, the Calm app? And Calm has changed my life. And I have shared this with, I don't know, maybe a dozen different people. And so far, everybody that I have suggested Calm to has found that it worked exactly the same for them. So I am sure that at some point in time, someone will try this and it will not make a difference. So far, everybody I've told about it, every time I see them, the first thing they say is, oh my gosh, Calm, thank you so much for telling me about this. So the Calm app, there are a lot of different things on this app. The first thing I want you to know about are called sleep stories. And these are stories that you listen to. Most of them are about 20 minutes long. There are many, 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 many different sleep stories with different readers and topics and different lengths and many, many, many different ones. You could browse around and pick one that you like or pick a bunch that you like. They are designed to help you go to sleep. Now, when my friend told me about this, I said, this is not going to work. I'm going to want to know about the story and I'm going to stay awake to listen to the story. But it is so rare that you're actually still awake at the end of the story and you just go to sleep. And it does not mean that I never wake up. I will often, what I do is I have my headset with the earbuds. And I stick one of under my pillow and I put the other one in my ear so that my husband doesn't have to listen to sleep stories when I wake up. And I just plug one into my ear and I'll usually listen to one while I'm falling asleep just because I go to sleep faster. And if I wake up during the night, which still happens occasionally, I just reach over. I might still have my earbud in my ear from falling asleep earlier. I just touch my phone, the sleep story starts, and most of the time in two sentences or so, I'm back asleep again. And then I sleep. And so actually, if you're only awake for a couple of minutes, it doesn't even count as waking up really, because you can go back to sleep. And my personal theory, I'm sure there's a ton of science about this, my personal theory is anything for me, in my experience, anything that you think about at 3 o'clock in the morning is 10 times more serious than when you think about it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And as soon as I wake up and my brain cells light up, all I need is two brain cells to light up. And all of a sudden I'm just awake because I start thinking about stuff. And I think the sleep stories just fill in all that space. So you have something to do. And they're designed to help you fall asleep. Some of them are train stories. If you can imagine listening to a story about a train trip and the sound of the trains, many, many, many different sorts. And most people I know have, you know, half a dozen or so that they like a lot. Right now, I'm listening to one that's about someone who is hiking a very famous trail in our area where I live, the Pacific Crest Trail, and they're amazing. Now, along with the sleep stories, there's also a daily meditation. Many mornings, my husband and I do this daily calm, which is a morning meditation that you can do. There are nature sounds. So if you just want to listen to the sound of the ocean or a river or something for a while, lots and lots of nature sounds. So there's a whole bunch of resources on this. I am here to tell you sleep stories, for me, life-changing. I can't even remember the last time I woke up during the night and stayed awake. And after years of insomnia, the fact that I'm sleeping through the night, being awake for at the most 5 minutes, and going back to sleep is pretty amazing. If this helps any of you in any way, I am so thankful to be able to do it. Thank you, Angela. The Calm app, it does a 7-day free trial. So you have 7 days to figure out how much better you can sleep. And then after that, it costs $69.99 and worth every penny for the change in the quality of the life for me. Yeah, Becky, is that your hand?
I'm just going to give you a couple more pieces on that. Calm. When you first pull it up, you'll see rain going down on trees. That particular, and I think it's an 8-hour rain app, or, you know, rain sound dance story, whatever you want to call it. But many people feel like that's the best natural, real sounding rain that you can get out there. And that one you can hear right off the bat for free. So you can sort of have a sense of that. The other piece that you talked about that I think is important to kind of talk about because brown noise is kind of new. You know, they talk about white noise machines. If you're going to get a machine, you need one that's not on a loop. It needs to actually generate the noise. If it's on a loop, you'll hear that loop and it'll keep you awake. But the true white noise machines, now you can get them to run through your phone as a solid sound. Brown noise machine or brown noise sound makes is better for people sometimes with ADD. I have ADD. I do not like brown noise. It bugs me. I can sleep beautifully to white noise. The only problem with all of that is as we age, our ears start struggling with that much sound. And if you want to improve your hearing immediately, if you sleep with the sound of a fan or white noise or brown noise, turn it off and learn to sleep without it. Your hearing will immediately improve. So it's a mixed bag, but the calm and the telling of the stories, that's such a almost a primal thing for us to be told stories as we're falling asleep. So not only does it work just in terms of the timbre or the tone of the person's voice, but there is a piece of us who says, oh yes, I remember this, and probably centuries and centuries within us that says, oh yes, I remember this.
Oh, Becky, I really like the connection between, you know, if anybody read to you while you were falling asleep as a child or something, that would be just such a remembrance of that kind of thing. And the fact that they are about 20 minutes. So, you know, the story goes and then it stops, right? So to Becky's point, it's not a noise that you're hearing the whole time that you're sleeping. You hear your story. It just stops. And it's so rare for me to still be awake when I get to the end of the story. There are a lot of stories where I have no idea how they end, but I'm sure it's all fine. Teresa, you have your hand up. And then Ava.
I just wanted to show you. I got it. I got the app.
Cool.
Cool, because you really pointed. I do have this problem and the monkey talks, and I tell them, please, can you wait until I would like to talk about those items that they are going. And it's, I can sleep and at 3 o'clock in the morning, as you say, and it's an hour, and it's really... it's painful in a certain way. I remember we had at the time a television with a slumber, and I did the slumber and I was watching TV, and then the TV just stopped when I fell asleep. And I tell you, I will really try this, because I even, you know, after COVID, I had some problems also with heart, how do you say, extra systoles and everything. And finally, it is really, it's in here. And I tell you, I'm going to try it. I'm really happy because when I have to get up in the morning and I have to drive, I say, I have to sleep at least 6 hours. And then you already start to say, I don't sleep. So I'm going to tell you how it works.
I'm looking forward to it. Yes, you cannot rationalize with the brain clutter. No, I tried the mantra, the most important thing you can do right now is sleep. The most important thing you can do right now is sleep. I tried the squeegee. I had the squeegee to take all the junk out of my head. Go away. We're sleeping now. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't work.
I just add something, please, about music, because I am very much happy with the music of 432 Hertz from Emiliano Toso. It's an Italian biologist, and I think I already told it in the group. And this is, it's not a meditation music, because when I listen to the meditation music, I am... The monkeys are saying it's always the same. So in my head. So it doesn't really, I do not really work well with this music. If you listen to the music of Emiliano Torso. The ultimate CD is The Tree of the Music, and where the rainbow starts, there are all music with piano, with violoncello, with different, and what is nice is, I can show it to you, actually, is his mother is painting the pieces he is creating. It is really...
Teresa, will you type that into the chat for us?
Just to listen about, listen to yourselves flying beyond belief is one title, translation and music. And I'm going to write it down. And he was working together with Bruce Lipton with cells. So we are in a very, and for the day, it works very well to me. The only thing I have to admit, I prefer not to have any electronic things close to the bed. Right. And I think I have to make an exception if I want to listen to the night music, to the night stories. But anyway, thank you very, very much. That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm going to write it down.
Yeah, please, again. Please write that down. Yeah. That is great. And I agree about the electronics. I have the focus on, so my phone's not going to bother me at all. I just have my sleep stories. That's it. Ava, please.
And I would set it away from your body as far as your little cord earbuds will let. Yeah.
So I do not disturb my husband either.
It's just close enough so when I wake up, I don't have to do anything except.
Okay.
I can set it up the night, you know, I can set it up so then I just pick it up and push the button. That's it.
May I just add something very interesting about Emiliano Torso? There was a surgeon in Italy, in Ancona. He had to make a surgery of an 11 years old boy with a brain surgery. For many hours he were working on that. And he asked Emiliano Torso, with his piano, to stay in the hospital to play the music connected to the cells, because this 432 hertz, as you may know, is really the frequency for our cells from the universe. And this is, I'm so happy to share that with you. Anyway, so I was talking a lot.
Thank you, Teresa. Really important information. Ava, please.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, when you talk about storytelling to fall asleep, it reminds me of the NLP meditation where there's a story and it really put me to sleep. I just couldn't go to the end of it. The same idea, maybe, I don't know.
I just read an article about how many people listen to the British, I'm not going to remember exactly what it's called. It's the weather report for the shipping people. And apparently since the 1980s, people tune in to the report, and it just goes through what the weather is like at all these different ports. And I was telling my British friend about it, and she goes, oh yes, I've been listening to that since the 80s. And she said, there's a sleep story that goes through it as well. So I checked out the sleep story as well. Nothing like a long weather report about the wind at different ports, I guess, to help you feel sleepy. So let's go. Thank you, Ava. Let's go ahead and take our break. I always like to call it a self-care break. So this is your self-care break. It means get up and move around, get some water or some tea or something. Make sure you look outside, give your eyes a break from the screen. And let's be back in 10 minutes, which looks like it would be 15 after the hour by my clock right here. So we'll see you very soon. And so welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a good self-care break. And I know that Becky, I know that you had a couple things you were going to check back in with people about and talk about a bit more about mindfulness. Is that right?
And I even pulled some mindfulness meditations for us to play with. So especially since, do we call you Rasha or Suzanne? Or is it Raya?
Rasya, I think.
Rasya.
Rasya.
Yeah, so we'll play with several different ways to see if we can't pull that blood pressure down today. I wanted to check back in. How many of you guys were here the day that I did the mindfulness thing where you walked away with some homework that you were going to play with? So Judy was here. Karina. Eva, you were here, right? I think so. So at any rate, we'll review it a tiny bit for you, for those of you who weren't here. But for those of you who were here, if you found something that you're willing to share, I'd love for you to share it because it helps other people to say, oh yeah, I do that too. Or, oh, I have a version of that that I do. So if you were here and you found something that you're ready to talk about, I'm going to have you put your hand up in a moment. But first, let me just sort of go over what we did before. What we talked about was, sorry, did somebody need to say something? Okay. What we talked about was the idea that, sorry, as we age, we tend to start moving less to begin to reduce the kinds of things that we do in ways that both limit our range of motion and begin to mess with our balance. Now, mind you, some of that happens anyway, but we speed that process up by rather than challenging ourselves or asking our body to maintain those discernments, we sort of help them get out of doing the work that you know, we get really good at avoiding the work is, I guess, how I would say that. Now, that's not going to be true for everybody. Some of you may have listened to me, was that last Tuesday, I guess, and thought, gosh, I don't do any of that. Some of you may have said that and then afterwards thought, oh, there's what I'm doing. They tend to be really buried and embedded in who we are. And I will review one that, and Marnie, be thinking of one for you because you, I know, have done enough of this that you can think of one. The one that I shared Tuesday, and I'll just say it briefly again, I realized one morning that in order to put on my pants, I was sitting down on my toilet. And I thought, I know how to stand up and put on my pants. And so I really thought that through for a second and realized that part of me very simply was saying, yeah, but this is easier. This is easier. I can do it easier this way. So I made myself take the pants off and walked back over to the dresser and I put them on and it was harder than I expected. Part of me had already begun to lose some of that skill set. So I worked on that. And for about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, the biggest part, the hardest part was making myself remember to not sit down. And I can't tell you how many days I was already, the pants were half on before I went, nope, and had to take them back off again. Once I got to where I could actually remember to try to put them on standing, it got quite a bit easier within about 2 weeks. One of the things I said on Tuesday was, if you're in a hospital bed, within 10 days, you lose all muscle tone. Well, if you think about a lot of the things that are part of what we would call our activities of daily living, we find ways to shortcut and short shrift the muscles that we need to develop and keep maintained in order to do those things. So after 2 or 3 weeks, I got to where I could do it. But here's the embeddedness piece of the part of me that tries to get out of this stuff. What I noticed just over the last couple of weeks, and I didn't used to do this, but part of me is figuring out a way around this. So I have a really large cage in my room for one of the dogs who can get out of anything. It's a big old gorilla cage, right? Some of you know what those are. And I notice I want to lean a hip on that gorilla cage as I'm starting to put those pants on. Well, that's new. Again, that's that part of me who says, yeah, but it's just easier if we just lean a little bit. So some of this is just about us. You know, we're clever. We do try to make things easier. Now, there is a difference. So people who are really prone to this are people who are hypermobile, and I'm one of those. People who are hypermobile tend to live in their bones and their joints and not their muscles. They get out of doing the work of their muscles because they can. And they get more information if they're into their body, if they're right up against the edges of what those joints can do. But it's really good for them to practice being in their muscles instead of their bones. So I know I'm fighting that. There is another set of folks who fight this too. And those are people who are really tight in their muscles. Because if my range of motion, weightlifters is a great example. When I have guys come into yoga who are weightlifters, their range of motion for that arm is about here. You know, because they're so developed that they have a hard time getting those arms up. Well, the reality is, again, we start trying to, rather than making ourselves reach, instead, we try to put things down at a level that we can already reach. So the homework that I sent everybody away with, Debbie, was just to think of where is a spot that you miss opportunities to practice your balance, to practice your range of motion, to extend and reclaim those things. Anybody have one that immediately occurred to you after we did it? Anybody want to share one that came up for you? Yeah, go for it, Katarina.
Well, exactly like you, it is the pants, it is the socks, it is the shoes. I've had two hip replacements, and the hips are doing great, but I know that I didn't get the full recovery of that in my quadriceps and all of that, and even of all the things that I've done. So it's just been easier. And it doesn't mean it's been easy, but it's been easier. So I didn't do 100% of the time, but I have stood up, almost rolled over, you know, but to put on my pants and my socks, even if it's just my shoes, just practicing it a bit more. Another thing that I noticed,
I'm going to ask you a question. Don't you notice you're having a conversation with yourself about, well, I did the pants. Can I sit for the socks?
Nothing about me. I love comfort. It's comfort's a lovely thing. So, but, you know, I get it. And I want to age more fluidly, you know, and comfort in a different kind of comfort. So it's important.
And you bring up a really important thing, which is so many times too, part of where we lose this is an injury or a knee or hip replacement or an illness where we quit doing something and then we don't fully reclaim it when we come back. In fact, it's interesting. Absolutely. I injure myself. I go to a sports doc and he's so funny because after I'm recovered, he says, well, Becky, again, you have to go to PT. And I'm like, I do. And he says, yeah, because you overprotect yourself. So you lose range of motion every time. You've got to make yourself push a little further and not in pain. I mean, that's really important. I don't want people to think that I'm asking you to go move into pain. I'm not. But but we tend to have all kinds of muscles around injuries that go and they stay there. You know, that's that resilience thing that we were talking about with that shoulder surgery, is that part of that's about healing, but part of that is also about changing that internal narrative of, oh my God, what have you done to me? And that takes some time, and it takes us working that through with our body. So you had another piece you were going to add to that.
Well, the part I thought about, it's a little bit different, but you were telling the story about the school teacher and who would, with the knee issue, and then he caught himself putting his foot up on a table or a chair while he was giving his lecture. So that's what he was always pressing. So for me, I noticed something that I do, and I've noticed it off and on before, but I just said, I just didn't pay attention to it. So people may have noticed cats love to sit on me. I love cats to sit on me. I've put behind me so my feet touch the ground. So cats don't go rolling off my lap. I always push my toes up and hold things up. So everything is tightened up and holding them all the time. They are far too important to me, this one that's been on me is almost 18 years old. She's doing really well, but I'm not going to let them fall off. And I don't even think about it. I'm just up and solid. But,
oh, I love that. That's exactly what I was talking about. Because some of these things you won't necessarily decide you want to change, but it's the awareness of being in a different relationship with your body where you say, oh, I'm noticing you. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I'm after, because that's where you'll find it's that fine level of discernment. You know, when somebody drinks a glass of red wine and says, yeah, it's red wine, versus someone who says, oh, can you taste the mushroom in that? And and you're like, the what? But that's only because they've listened for those deeper qualities and flavors. And some of what I'm asking you to do is simply reclaim something that you always had, which was, and I love that, you know, Debbie was talking earlier about that curiosity and that listening and not having the agenda. We once knew how to do that beautifully, but we get out of that and we look for the easy ways or the shortcuts or the, you know, what somebody told us in a book. But there's something about reclaiming that very internal experience of, huh, when I hold the cats on my lap, I'm working those quads all the time. That right there is the beginning of noticing so that you can decide whether or not you want to change something. And sometimes you won't. You know, if every other exercise you do really builds your quads, which are back behind you instead of what's in front of you, then that's fine because you've got balance. But if all of the, you know, if you are a bicyclist and you are quad heavy in what you're doing for your exercise, now you're going to get out of balance with what's going on in your hamstrings. So it's that awareness and beginning to think about all of those being in relationship to each other. So I love that one. That's a great example.
And I'm sure there's so much more, but I was getting, it's too much to think about it. And so I'm going to do it again this weekend.
Yeah,
I will find
it. You're going to keep finding more and more. And when, at least when Linda's gone, if we want to take 5 minutes at the beginning for people to go, oh my God, here's what I caught myself doing this week, we can maybe do that.
I like that. Yeah. This is a great idea, Becky, and I wasn't here last week, but just when you were describing this, I was thinking about how much I noticed exactly what you were talking about. I noticed how much I was leaning against the dresser to put my pants on, and I was thinking, this isn't so good for my overall stability. You know, I live on property, I'm walking on uneven surfaces all over my hilly ground through the forest and everything. And I want to be stable on my feet. Particularly as we get older, sometimes we lose some of that balance and stability. And I started to think, okay, what are the things that I need to be able to do in order to put my pants on without sitting down or leaning against the dresser, right? And what I started doing is standing on one foot when I brush my teeth. So I have an electric toothbrush, and it beeps every 30 seconds And so what I would do is see if I could stand on one foot for 2 minutes in the morning, and then at night for 2 minutes on the other foot. Now, since I've had my Achilles injury, I can't do 2 minutes. So I've been doing 1 minute one foot, other minute the other foot. And it keeps me accountable because my toothbrush beeps at me and I totally forgive myself. Sometimes I can be pretty stable and sometimes I can't. Sometimes I'm reaching for the counter, but I feel like intention counts, right? So, because I used to feel like, oh, Deb, you had to hold on to the dresser. You know what? It's okay. You still have that intention to do that.
Well, and I love one of the things you're saying that I think I need to underline here is you have to start small and you have to move up in increments. In fact, we just had this happen in one of my classes. Somebody who's I always check in, how's everybody this week? She said, well, last week in yoga, I broke my toe. And I was like, oh God, how did that happen? So as we talked her through it, what she had done was she just put herself into a plank or a down dog or something where she had all her weight on her toes. And I said, okay, let's back up. If I said to you, will you lift your torso and legs for me with your toes? Could you do that? And she said, no. I said, well, that's what you made yourself do. What made you think you could do that? But we do that to ourselves all the time. We think we can do something that we can't do, that we once could do, maybe, and now we can't. So when you think about reclaiming these, chunk them down into small bits. You could even go, if you have a toothbrush like Debbie's, you could even do 30 seconds one foot, 30 seconds the other foot, and you wouldn't have to do it the whole time. When I first started yoga, if I did a down dog between everything that we did, halfway through the class, I was toast. I couldn't finish the class. So I got to where it's like, okay, I'll do the first three with a down dog. And then after that, I'm done with down dogs for the class so I can get to the end of the class. So when you first start playing with, okay, I want to reclaim this. It's not, I'm just going to stand in the middle of the room and see how I do. That's a bad plan because that's, you're going to be calling saying, well, I've broke my hip. I fell and hurt myself. What you're going to start with is, can I, and we talked about this a little bit last week, can I take a hold and put less of my body weight in that hand when I'm doing something rather than, and eventually I get to where I tell people, you can, don't just touch it for the proprioceptory, go ahead and hook that thumb on the other side so that in case you have to grab, you're already there. I don't want you to be here and have to grab like that. In that split second, you're already down. You have to be in position to protect yourself. So it's okay to experiment with this stuff and play, but do so super mindfully of what you are able to do. Same thing if you're going to lean on your arms, you know, I can't bench press my weight. So it would be really silly of me to think that if I fall, I can completely stop myself and come back up with just my arms. I can't. So be thinking about this. It's fine to play with this and experiment. But experiment safely, experiment carefully. And if you're like, well, I get that idea, but I have no idea how. I said this in the last class, you're welcome to come do a free class with me one time where you just say, Becky, I need you to talk me through, how do I do this? And we'll take the time in the class to do it. We take turns doing that in class all the time.
So Becky, I love to just add in the thought that if, you know, putting on a body wrap could be really awesome in supporting
your brilliant well, idea, right?
Because it really gives you so much more proprioceptive sense and body awareness and really experiment. You know, this is where, again, be curious. Huh, wonder what would happen if I wrapped my legs. I wonder if it's different if I wrap my head. You know, maybe today I want to do a shrug wrap or a torso wrap of some sort, or maybe you're going to do a head to toes thing. I think that experimenting with wraps along with this increases your mindfulness because it gives you more idea about what you're doing.
Well, and I'll give you a really clear example of that. I specialize in spinal cord injuries. So when I was working yoga stuff with one of my spinal cord people, I said, you know, you're going to think I'm nuts. Just bear with me. I'm going to wrap your legs. Wrapped her legs. And I said, okay, now walk. This is a spinal cord injury. She's not getting information down into her legs. It changed her gait immediately, not after she'd taken a few steps, but immediately. And if I had asked her, do you feel those wraps? She would have said no. But some part of her body did. There's a wonderful book called The Brain That Changes Itself that really talks about whether it's stroke or a spinal cord injury, or that our brain is a really bright idea of bypassing and creating new neural net pathways. And one of the ways that we really help that is with T-Touch, because T-Touch gives your body more information. And those wraps at a proprioceptory level, give your body more information, and at a level that we don't even understand, because it's not just the touch. She wasn't getting the touch sensation. She was getting it on a completely different level. So yeah, and I love the idea too of, you know, remember, a lot of our balance happens up in that inner ear. So you may be wrapping your legs, but then, okay, now wrap your head and see what that does to your balance instead of your legs. You know, play with wrapping that torso. Are you standing out of balance to begin with? You wrap that torso, your torso straightens up and says, no sweat, I can balance this. This is easy. So you will be surprised at where you're going to find the discernment of what you need to shift. So thank you, Debbie. Yeah, that's awesome. Anybody else got one that happened for them this week that they discovered? Marnie, you want to tell one for you? I know you've had a couple. And she may have stepped away to deal with a pup. The other one that I routinely do.
I was muted and started talking. Okay. Do you want me to do this?
Yeah, I do. Go ahead.
Well, what happened while we were sitting here talking about getting dressed, I suddenly realized, this is kind of backwards, I suddenly realized I have no idea how I got dressed before I had all this stuff going on and all my life. And then I realized, and I said, did I sit down? And then I realized I've been showing horses since I was a little kid. And you get dirty getting ready. Little kids always do. So you've got to change your pants into the white pants. And you have to put in your high boots because they're way too expensive to be grubbing around with your pony out there, you know, whatever. And so, and there's no time, always no time. So it's not that you could go to the restroom. You need to be getting your horse ready. And so you hop into the trailer and close the door and change. Well, okay, you can't sit down in a horse trailer that has been used the way to the thing. And I have no idea. And then I suddenly remembered that I changed on the fly. I was always hopping along, pulling things up or on or off. And that includes the boots. And then I remember the time that they were calling my name. This, you know, and your trainer is always not impressed when you're not ready to go. It was a warning, but it was, and I was putting on my boots and I flew out of the trailer and landed. It takes two hands to pull up your boots, right? So I flew out of the trailer, which has a step down, and I landed smack on my face, still holding onto my boots because that was the important part. And so I realized I didn't even know how I was putting on clothes, you know, in order to make a difference, except it all changed once I had the surgery. And I also remembered in the morning, we were always in a hurry because we need to get to the barn, and there were these impatient horses waiting. And so morning was just get going and get out there, you know, kind of thing. So, and now I remember that I was hopping around a lot at home, you know, getting ready to go. And that's all I remember. And I don't, you know, and speaking to be mindful, I didn't remember all that. That was all pretty mindless. It's coming to me now. And it's like, holy cow, you know, because it's a little different now. So anyway, it's the.
No, but I do think as you start working this, not only will you begin to think, well, wait a minute, have I always done this? Wait a minute, how did it used to be? But you'll also discover, oh my God, I know when this bad habit started. I know when this way of doing something happened. And I haven't ever tested it out since then to see whether or not I still need to do that. You know, we do compensatory actions all the time. My favorite example of this one, my mother, and I'm going to have to stand up and show you guys this one. So my mom uses a cane. And at one point, we were doing some rehab with her. So we have a PT who's working her. And my mom is walking with her cane like this. I'm going to show you what she was doing. First, I'll show it to you sideways. So she's walking and rolling the hip, walking, rolling the hip, walking, rolling the hip, right? I'll walk towards you so you can see it that way. She's walking, rolling a hip, walking, rolling a hip. So here's the cute part. The PT knew that I did yoga right hot. And she turned to me and she grinned and she said, watch this. She said, Ruth, I want you to take that cane and lay it on your hands lengthwise and walk to me. And my mom kind of looked a little panicked, but she said, okay. And she walked like this, right towards her. Not moving that hip at all. So what that really said was, she had a habitual way of moving. She was moving habitually, compensating for some injury she'd had somewhere along the line, and didn't even realize that she had recovered that. Now, had I thought about it, Debbie, back to your wrapping stuff, if I had been smart, when I saw her do that, without saying a word to her, I could have just wrapped her and said, humor me, let's just wrap you and try and walk without your cane. She would have walked just fine. I know that would have worked. But so it's just worth noticing all of this kind of thinking about it more, being more mindful about it. What you're going to discover are you start to be, and I want you to be at play with yourself. Don't turn this into a job and don't get prescriptive or mean, right? You have to be at play with this part of you who's saying, make me, because if you don't talk her into it from a place of joy and fun, she ain't going. I got news for you. These pieces of us can be very belligerent and say, nope, we're doing it my way. And you kind of hear that within your head saying, no, that won't work. No, I don't want to try that. And a lot of times that really is about that disconnect. And quite frankly, what I tell my psychotherapy clients is, it doesn't trust you because it's had experiences with you where you either lied or you didn't listen or you were mean or judgmental. And so why would it trust us? So some of this is about reconfiguring that relationship between you and your body. And the first step is beginning to listen. So that's really what we're talking about with this. Anybody else have one that they just want to share today that happened to them this week when they started looking at this and trying? I'll give you one more. For me, I realized I was leaning on the sink with my hips. And again, that's that thing of if I can figure out a way to lean, to live into my bones instead of my muscles, I will. And I started thinking about it. And Marnie, you made me think about that today. Well, how long have I noticed I do this? And I can remember back when I was trying to lose baby weight from when my son was born. He's now in his 30s. Leaning on the sink thinking, you're not using your abdominals at all there. If you want to get some of that baby weight off your middle, you really should be standing upright. So that's how long I know I've done this. When I make myself stand upright and not lean on the sink, if I'm standing at the sink, I immediately start hearing a part of me go, I'm having to work hard. I really don't want to work here. And there are two things that I notice. I either stand too far back from the sink. And by the way, I have a balance disorder. So I'm certain that's part of this, in that it's hard for me to balance forward. But it's as simple as, well, if I'd step a little closer to the sink, it wouldn't be so hard. And of course, that has just occurred to me in this moment. So I'll let you know how that works. But those are the kinds of things you're going to start to find.
And Becky, I just love your perspective about being mindful about this, because I think that, you know, we all know when you know what you do, you can do what you want, right? And so often we're just not aware. And I totally agree with Katerina that, you know, I'm definitely a comfort zone junkie. You know, I want to be comfortable. You know, how many of us say, oh, that would be comfortable, but I'm not going to do it that way. That feels good, right? We all want to do things that feel good. And so I think that acknowledging, you know, of course we do what we do because it's easier than some other choice. And sometimes we don't even realize that there is another choice. It's a lot like Becky's mom. It's a lot easier to just walk in balance. But if you have a habit that says to you, your nervous system saying, oh no, it has to be like this, we forget that we have a choice. And I was thinking about it relative to sitting in a chair and getting up from a chair. And I think that, you know, knowing that you can exhale and roll forward just a little bit and stand up and sit down, it's pretty easy. But how often do we feel like, no, I got to use my arms and I got to go straight up in this chair and then I got to get my feet underneath me and now I can walk away. And then I get back and I flop into the chair, because how else would I do it? And if you can just show your body, and maybe some wraps help in the process, exhale, roll, stand up, fold, exhale, sit down. My goodness, how much easier is that? And your nervous system can say, wow, I wonder why we haven't been doing that. That's a lot easier.
And if you watched her just then, she stayed over her center of balance the whole time as she moved. But we get out of the habit of that. Mm-hmm. And that piece that you said, I want to anchor this for you guys. So when, you know, a lot of times you'll see, and you see that's in yoga too. When they're teaching something, they often have you inhale as you come up, as you start to move into something. Here's the problem with that. If I'm inhaling, I'm putting more work up here. All of that ends up in my lower back. If you can get in the habit of exhaling when you effort, I know it's counterintuitive, but if I exhale as I start to move forward, what happens is all that core starts to work. Now I'm not feeling anything here because all of this is working to support it. Does that make sense? It's one of those things where exhaling as you stand, exhaling as you fold forward, exhaling as you start to come back up, all of those can help support that back so that it doesn't get overused, because especially in the West, we live in our backs, mostly because we aren't in the practice of putting things in our heads to carry them. People who live in countries who carry things on their heads don't do that business. They don't have lower back pain, because very quickly you'd be in trouble if you're not totally balanced. Okay, so let's play with for a second.
Dorothy has her hand up. Let's grab
Dorothy. Yes, Dorothy, go.
I have a good chance to ask you something, Debbie. It's getting up off the floor. And I have the opposite problem of I have lots of bad ways of getting up, because I'm stiff these days, and so I'm just wondering what is a good way to keep your balance and use your core and such to get up off the floor if you're doing yoga or whatever.
You know, Dorothy, that's such an excellent question, because I know that with this foot injury and one that I had not so long before that, I lost a lot of my muscle tone that helped me to get up and down off the floor easily. And I am up and down off the floor constantly because I'm working with people with their dogs and cats and I'm on the floor. And now I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, 2-year-old grandson and 4-year-old granddaughter. And we are up and down off the floor constantly. So I have a lot of opportunity to practice, and I sure have noticed that my grace of getting up and down has deteriorated with my Achilles injuries. I hate to say that this is my second one. I did the other one some time ago, and it really changed my feeling of stability. And so I was just now talking with my physical therapist about better ways to get up and down off the floor. And I recognize that working my toothbrush exercise is going to help me quite a bit with that, because it gives me more awareness of my balance and the muscle strength that I have in my legs. And so actually what I would love to do, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that the next time, maybe later today I can do that. I would love to video me getting up and down off the floor, because I feel like it looks clunky. It may look better than I think it does. Maybe on the inside, maybe it looks worse than it does on the outside. But I think that...
Debbie, maybe we take some time. Are you leading like next week or the week after? Oh. Well, maybe we just leading the Tuesday?
Leading. I thought you said leaving, like leaving. Like
leading. Traveling. Sorry. Leading.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna be back.
Space where we really play with this. You know, Marnie, it would be good to post the link to, is it Ruthie Allen? Do I have that right? Her video.
I was gonna say, we've been collecting these videos and discussions.
How to get up and down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what we might do is post those links, and then you guys could play with it. And then when you have problems with any part of it, we could work that through maybe next week.
So I want to be sure I'll be your guinea pig people. We'll work on it.
And I want to be sure we get Teresa in. Teresa, what did you need to add?
I was listening to what you were saying, and I was thinking about what I am doing. I am fine when I am moving, because I have neuropathy problems. I have 2 hip replacements, and they wanted to change my knees. So also from replacement, and I told the surgeon, listen, I talked to my knees, and he said, if ever you don't know what to say to your knees, I'm here. And that was 10 years ago. So I have no knee replacement, because I have almost no cartilage on my knees. So I was thinking about Feldenkrais, how you have to get up from the bed. I learned that. I did 2 years of Feldenkrais. Due to the surgery, they were hurting my ischias nerve, you know, and I'm living with that. So I learned quite a lot. And I do so many things, just like tooth brushing, walking, doing some movements from one foot to the other, inside, outside. And when I'm standing in a queue, I just moving all the way. I like moving. I was dancing when I was younger, so I'm in movement. When I am laying down, I do have problems with the nerves. So to stand up for me, and I will try what you said, Debbie, in exhale to do the movement. I think that's a very good situation, and to say when I on the floor working also with dogs, when we have the courses, you may laugh when you see me to do. I'm rolling because they want to help me to stand up, except I can't because I have problems with my hands all over. So I'm rolling down, coming from the elbow, and I'm standing up, and it works. So to say that everyone has to find out what to do, the movement which goes best.
I think next week we need to watch you do a couple of those, because I do think it's that whole creative piece that we might find we had six different ways of getting up that were incredibly creative among you guys.
Yeah. So I'm probably just, I was thinking also how to put the pants and the, all these things as I'm, it is really like toothbrush to do these little exercises and do them all the time. It is a part of me. And it's like dancing. You feel fine. And I, when I go somewhere, I never take the elevator. I walk up. Mm-hmm. I take the elevator to go down, because this is a problem for my knees. So I'm walking. I'm still walking and happy to be able to do what I can. But anyway, it is so important, movement in any situation.
And for those of us who hate movement, you're talking to one, there are some ways to trick yourself. You can embed it in something you already do, and we can talk about that some. And the other thing is, for me, part of why yoga became my thing was it's got a spiritual component to it. I hate moving. And so I had to have it turn into something else. And you can hear that in the mindfulness, right? I was drawn to mindfulness, and that helped me move, because I'm not just moving now. I'm in a whole nother zone. So let's play with, I'm going to give you guys some real quick and dirties that will maybe help Raja before we go. So I want to teach you that alternate breath. Marnie, I think, has everybody's emails, and Marnie could send a super, super simple copy. We'll see. We may not have time for it today. Oh, we don't. So we'll save the mindful breath for, or the alternate nostril breath for another week. And so remember that, Debbie, that if you need a fill.
I did post it on the Facebook page. Oh, so perfect. We did.
You guys can play with it. But if you're going to do it, don't close off your nostrils at the bottom. Close it off. You want to come clear up here on that cartilage. Come just to the edge of the cartilage. And notice how little pressure it takes to close it off if you're up there. If you're down here, it's going to require much more pressure, and it knocks your nose out of balance. It's just a whole thing. But so if you stay right up there where the cartilage is and just barely press, it makes the whole thing much softer and smoother and even. But so we can play with that someday if we want to. Thank you for posting that, Marnie. Okay, let's do a little meditation, see if we can't shift her blood pressure a minute. So everybody get in a comfortable position. Those of you who love to lay down when you meditate, go for it, lay down. We'll just do kind of a 5-10 minute. And this is really about beginning to notice the level at which you can be mindful, that in ways that you've never even thought about maybe. So get in a super comfortable position. You're going to be in this for at least 5-10 minutes. So if you're laying down and you know that you need something under those knees or under your hamstrings, please put something under them. If you know you need something under those feet or something under your wrists so your wrist isn't completely flat. So get comfy and let your eyes drift closed. And we're just going to experiment and play with the notion of mindfulness for a moment. And so the first thing I want you to do, you're doing this in your mind's eye with your eyes closed. I want you to be in the room that you're in. Just remembering in your mind's eye some things about that room. If you have a favorite thing to look at in that room, imagine that you're looking at it right now. And take a couple of slow, deep breaths and be with that thing in your room that you really enjoy seeing. And then let your eyes drift around that room to notice something that comforts you or warms you, and it could be a blanket or a favorite pillow or a throw. And for a moment, imagine yourself snuggling into that. And notice that just having it in the room reminds you that you are taking care of yourself, that you are providing comfort for yourself. Now let that picture of the room slide away. And I want you to be mindful about the state of your body. For a moment, just be present to your body. Notice what it feels. Notice where it's in contact with something else and being supported. For a moment, really let yourself feel that support, that you are releasing into that. And if you'd like, you can just take a moment to pick a particular spot in your body or function and thank your body for the work that it does. Now let that image go and begin to be present to the state of your mind. How was your mind before we started this? And how is your mind now? Now shift your awareness and notice the state of your feelings. What are your feelings doing right now? Now we're going to go a little harder here. I want you to let go of that awareness and be in a state of presence. You're just being present to yourself. You're just noticing what your presence in the world in this moment is. Inhabit that presence for just a moment. And then with your next exhale, let that go. And stand in a state of kindness. What do you notice to be in your body experiencing kindness? Now, one more. This one may be the hardest yet, but maybe by now you're like, oh yeah, I'm going, let's go. This time, stand in a space within yourself, a state of spacious attention. Spacious attention. Just notice. Now I'm going to give you one last one that's a little different than the others. Now, letting go of that spacious attention, I'm going to give you a full sentence. Now stand in a state where you create a clearing in the dense forest of your life. So we're talking metaphor here. One more time. Come into a state that is a clearing in the dense forest of your life. Create that clearing. And just be with that for a moment. And then release that. I'm going to give you one more now that we've kind of played with this a little bit and you're limbered up in your mindfulness. We're going to do one more exercise. So this time, coming back to your body, simply noticing your breath. And now, notice where your mind has wandered off to, or notice if it has wandered off, and bring it back to noticing your breath. Now again, we're going to go wide here. Now notice your shared breath. Who in your world right now, in your household, are you sharing breath with? Maybe another person or your animals? Push that out a bit. Outside of your house, who are you sharing that breath with? What's breathing in your yard? In your barns, for some of you. Now, one more push here. This time, notice your shared breath with all living creatures. As you breathe in and out, sharing an action that's universal across all creatures. Notice that shared breath. And I'm going to take you one more. This time, realizing that the atoms and molecules of oxygen and carbon that make up air have been with us forever. So for just a moment, I want you to stand in the place where you notice that you are breathing the air that the dinosaurs breathed. You're breathing air that your ancestors breathed. And that you breathe air that your T-Touch community breathes. And all those animals that you've touched across your T-Touch life. Stand for just a moment in that shared breath. And let that fill you. Take one last nice deep breath. Bring yourself back to the here and now in front of your computer, listening to the sound of my voice. And let that practice go. And some of you will be knocked out, because that's what happens for those of us who need that rest, is that often we just go away. So don't feel like you have to come back if your body is gone. Hopefully you found some little piece in there that would be fun for you to play with this week. Let yourself stand out in nature and stand in one of those ways of being that ask you to be more connected, that ask you to be more mindful in your daily world. That's all I have for today.
Thank you so much, Becky. It's really, really lovely. I noticed that as with the forest clearing, the trees around me still felt like my cozy blanket. And it was just such a nice feeling to be in my grassy little clearing, but the trees all around were still my cozy little place. And it was just such a nice feeling of support and comfort and the groundedness of these great big trees and all the wisdom that they have and all of that kind of thing. And so it was really wonderful. And I realize that some of you probably need to get on with your day, so we won't take too much more time. As far as I know, I'm back next week, unless the schedule changes. And I think the 28th, I'm also back. So we have time to check in with this. And I think the process of practicing getting up and down off the floor, I think that would just be really, really fun to check back in with. I'm going to start paying more attention because I think I get up and down pretty functionally. Could it be way easier? I bet. So let's play with it, everybody. So play with, so please pay attention to your mindfulness. Pay attention to what you do. When you know what you do, you can do what you want. And how fun for us to explore how to make our lives easier. Isn't that really what we're all looking for anyway? Joy and mindfulness and let's make all of this happier and easier. So,
and my promise to those of you who are saying, hey, I want to come to a free session or other stuff is that next week I'll put my email and my phone number in the chat so that you can have it. You know what? It occurs to me we should end with a heart hug would be really good to do.
That was exactly my intention. So let's finish with heart hug. And please know that the heart hug in whatever way is most comfortable for you. And of course, some of you, one is enough. For others, more is better. So in whatever way feels perfect for you, one hand, two hands, imagining, check in with yourselves for what this heart hug means for you in this moment, in this time. And thank you all for sharing this time with us and all of your wisdom and thoughts and everything that you have to share. I appreciate it so much. And I'm looking forward to, I'm pretty sure, seeing you next week unless something changes. So have a wonderful week, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Debbie, make sure you stop the recording.
And Marnie, be sure you save the chat.
Yes.
Suddenly I can't make mine save it. Oh, there it is.